Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Kudlow. I'm Larry Kudlow. So, anti-Semitism taking over the college campuses. Speaker Mike Johnson about to speak on it at Columbia University. Meanwhile, Joe Biden turning a blind eye. Donald Trump has a plan to solve it. We've got Steve Forbes, Jackie DeAngelis, and Tammy Bruce going to weigh in on the whole story. Former Attorney General Bill Barr is going to be here talking about the latest surveillance state power grab from Joe Biden's SEC. Breitbart's John Carney on Biden's regulatory octopus. And a left-wing groupthink chorus will be panned by Mark Simone and Joe Concha. But first up, Fox News senior national correspondent Rich Edson. He has the latest on rising anti-Semitism across the U.S. Rich, what you got?
Yeah, good afternoon, Larry. Well, this just came up again at the White House briefing. The White House getting asked again today about these protests that are spreading on campuses across the country and growing calls for university presidents to resign and for the administration to get more involved here. Part of that, you mentioned House Speaker Mike Johnson is going to address students and the media at Columbia University. He and other Republicans have called for the resignation of Columbia's president. White House was asked about that, refused to say or weigh in on any private university personnel decisions, but did condemn anti-Semitism. Here's that.
Protests must be peaceful. You know, students must be safe. When we see violent rhetoric, we have to call that out. When we see physical intimidation or grotesque anti-Semitic remarks, we have to speak that out.
The Biden administration through the Department of Education is investigating incidents of anti-Semitism at campuses across the country. As students, there have been video and pictures of anti-Semitic cheers, those touting or parroting terrorist organizations and the like. Republicans on Capitol Hill are calling for
Hang
more
on.
For the administration, but we're going to go to you.
Yeah, Rich, I think we've got Speaker. Yeah, there's Speaker Johnson. We're going to take
Thank
his
you all for being
remarks
here today.
For a moment.
We have several members of Congress here, and we're here today at one of America's preeminent academic institutions on a very important day and a very important time. Throughout history, Columbia students have contributed to the great storybook of America's life and thought. Visionary American leaders like Alexander Hamilton and John Jay and the Jewish leader Gershom Scheiches knew the self-evident truth that was at the heart of this country at the heart of this university, and that is that we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. They should not be infringed. The founders and the great leaders who had come through this institution in the past believed in religious liberty. They believed in democracy. They believed in morality and virtue and the dignity of every human person. They believed in the free exchange of ideas, and they detested mob rule. We are standing here right now on the steps of the Lowe Library. In this very building right behind us, Columbia University once awarded Winston Churchill an honorary degree, and it was Churchill who said, "It is manifestly right that Jews should have a national home where they may be reunited." We believe in that principle. And today I'm here to proclaim to all those who gnash their teeth and demand to wipe the state of Israel off the map and attack our innocent Jewish students, this simple truth: neither Israel nor these Jewish students on this campus will ever stand alone. Today, Hamas issued an endorsement statement of the protesters on this campus. They called them the future leaders of America. It is detestable. All of this has to be said because the cherished traditions of this university are being overtaken right now by radical and extreme ideologies. They place a target on the backs of Jewish students in the United States and here on this campus. A growing number of students have chanted in support of terrorists. They have chased down Jewish students. They have mocked them and reviled them. They have shouted racial epithets. They have screamed at those who bear the Star of David. Enjoy your free speech. They've told Jewish students who wear the Star of David to leave the country. And shamefully, some professors and faculty have joined the mobs. Things have gotten so out of control that the schools canceled in-person classes, and now they've come up with this hybrid model where they will discriminate against Jewish students. They are not allowed to come to class anymore for fear of their lives, and it's detestable. As Columbia has allowed these lawless agitators and radicals to take over, the virus of anti-Semitism has spread across other campuses. By some counts, as many as 200 universities have a similar form of protest right now. At Yale, a Jewish student was stabbed in the eye with a Palestinian flag, and 45 students were arrested. At NYU, pro-Hamas protesters were shouting from the river to the sea. Anti-Israel encampments are popping up at universities all across this country. The madness has to stop. The madness has to stop. We just left a meeting with Jewish students, who told us of the heinous acts of bigotry that they have experienced simply because of their faith. Their bravery is inspiring, much more inspiring than some of the activities we're seeing here. And they should never have to confront such hate on an American college campus. It's such a revered institution. Anti-Semitism has been growing in America, and it's clear why. Powerful people have refused to condemn it, and some have even peddled it themselves. From university professors to public officials, people in positions of authority have denied the horrific facts of September 11, 2001, the attacks on the United States that happened right here in New York City, and they've attempted to excuse or to ignore the barbaric attack of Hamas in Israel on October 7, 2023, where Israeli women and children were savagely raped and murdered, and infants were cooked in ovens. Crowds of radical activists have chanted death to America and on our own streets in this country, and sub-public officials have refused to condemn them. Others have openly defended these acts on campus, and the harassing and the intimidation and the threatening of innocent Jewish students simply because of who they are. They've called that peaceful protest, and some have even gone as far as calling for the state of Israel to be eliminated. These are words we expect from Ayatollahs in Iran, not American lawmakers and not American students. And unsurprisingly, it has given way to threats and violence in a generation of students who feel safe in their own classrooms, who don't feel safe in their own classrooms, or where they live or where they worship. Let me say this very simply. No American of any color or creed should ever have to live under those kinds of threats. That is not who we are in this country. Sadly, Columbia's administrators have chosen to let the threats, the fear, and the intimidation of the mob rule to overtake American principles like free speech and the free exchange of ideas and the free exercise of religion. They have co-opted First Amendment arguments to protect genocide and to elevate the voices of anti-Semitism. They have proven themselves to be incapable of achieving their basic responsibility, which is keeping students safe. We just can't allow this kind of hatred and anti-Semitism to flourish on our campuses, and it must be stopped in its tracks. Those who are perpetrating this violence should be arrested. And I'm here today joining my colleagues and calling on President Shafiq to resign if she cannot immediately bring order to this chaos. As Speaker of the House, I am committing today that the Congress will not be silent as Jewish students are expected to run for their lives and stay home from their classes hiding in fear. In the House of Representatives, we've already acted to address anti-Semitism on campuses. We have passed a number of statutes to address this matter, and we call upon the U.S. Senate to act upon our legislation. I have a couple of my colleagues here that I'd like to share a few words. I'll turn it over first to the chair of the House Education and Workforce Commission, Virginia Fox, Congresswoman Virginia Fox, North Carolina. Virginia?
Thanks, Mr. Speaker.
That was
Speaker
Mike Johnson with a very powerful opening talk, I thought, talking about the virus of anti-Semitism spreading among as many as 200 colleges around the country. He talks about the heinous acts of bigotry and a strong defense of Israel and Jewish people. And he said, we must keep students safe, no matter who they are and where they are. And he opined that the president of Columbia University should resign unless she can restore order on the campus. So it's very strong statement. We're going to bring in our panel, Steve Forbes, Jackie DeAngelis, and Tammy Bruce in just a moment. I had a couple of thoughts about the whole story. There is a moral and political cancer of anti-Semitism, and it's metastasizing throughout so many of the colleges and universities, and it's unleashed all manner of campus conflict and violence. And Joe Biden's turned a blind eye, and Donald Trump, on the other hand, has a plan to solve it. That's what I want to talk about. Mr. Biden says, I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. Then he adds quickly, I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians. That is a complete political cop-out. It's not even remotely a solution to the education breakdown in American higher learning. No one in politics has worked harder than Joe Biden in spreading the gospel of diversity, equity, and inclusion. But it is precisely that ultra-left gospel of DEI that has spawned the new anti-Semitism. Mr. Biden won't change a thing. Mr. Trump will. The former president wants to remove DEI from the federal bureaucracy writ large, especially the far-left federal education department. Mr. Trump also wants to use new accreditation standards that hark back to the traditional American and Western civilization and culture. In his video on Truth Social, he said, and I quote, when I return to the White House, I will fire the radical left accreditors that have allowed our colleges to become dominated by Marxist maniacs and lunatics, end quote. Mr. Trump would also tax endowments for noncompliance. He would also explore having colleges and universities fined up to the entire amount of their endowment. He will insist on a merit-based system to replace DEI. And he will also, quote, direct the Department of Justice to pursue federal civil rights cases against colleges and universities that continue to engage in racial discrimination, end quote. Now, I think enforcing civil rights laws against discrimination is absolutely crucial here, and Joe Biden never refers to it or talks about it. But in this morning's Wall Street Journal, Jason Riley reminds us that the current campus violence and conflict not only trespasses, blocks traffic, refuses police orders and generally causing disorder and disturbance, but it is illegal. And he goes on to cite former President Eisenhower, who sent in federal troops to stop white mobs in Little Rock, Arkansas, in defiance of the Supreme Court Brown versus Board of Education decision, who were preventing black students from safely attending school. I quote Mr. Riley directly. The federal government was obligated to come to the aid of an ethnic minority group being threatened by mob violence. Jews in 2024 deserve no less protection than blacks in 1957, end quote. And I couldn't agree more with my friend Jason Riley. That's my thought. All right, joining me now, we have Steve Forbes, Forbes Media Chair and Editor-in-Chief and former Princeton trustee, Jackie DeAngelis, co-host of The Big Money Show on Fox Business, and Tammy Bruce, Fox News contributor and author of the upcoming book, Fear Itself, Exposing the Left's Mind-Killing Agenda. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Steve Forbes, why don't you lead us off? Mr. Johnson gave a strong statement. I had a couple thoughts regarding Mr. Trump's own proposals, such as they are. What do you think as a former trustee of one of the nation's best schools?
Well, want to hit a college? Hit the endowment. That gets their attention.
Right.
Whammo. The other thing they should give consideration to is what Jason Riley recommends. If a campus cannot protect students, the governor of New York refused to do it, the mayor refused to do it, the Columbia administration refused to do it, then you send in the federal troops. There's plenty, the precedent of 1957, and you got to lay it out. Unfortunately, Joe Biden is incapable of making a national address the way Dwight Eisenhower did in 1957, laying out the need for and making sure that laws and safety are enforced. So in terms of the campuses, this does expose, as you pointed out and others have pointed out, the moral rot on campuses today that have been growing and festering for years. So it's almost good that it's now coming out for everyone to see, just like during the COVID lockdowns, parents could see what was really happening in our public schools. Mm. We now see graphically what's happened to our campuses.
Wow, great point. Tammy Bruce, there's lots to talk about here and there's lots to chew on here, but I just want to spend a moment more if we could. Civil rights laws are being broken, and Joe Biden has nothing to say about that. That's why I wanted to quote my friend Jason Riley, who you know everybody in this panel knows quite well. But civil rights laws are being broken, for heaven's sakes, and Biden and his Justice Department won't do a thing about it.
True. And with Eisenhower and what was going on in the 50s, even with the Kennedys, those actions of defending groups of Americans, those who are being assaulted, those who are being isolated and targeted, also educated the American population at large. Mm. All right. It was a reminder to us. It's one thing for it to be on paper. It's another thing to then enforce it. Same with the Constitution, right? If it's not addressed and dealt with and embraced and applied, it means nothing. Same with our laws. All the laws are on the books. A lot of laws are being broken these days. And those, too, are not being addressed or applied. So we've got a generation here that is looking, and Americans of all generations are looking to see if the government will take seriously our own civil rights laws, what several generations now, including my own, worked for and sometimes went to jail for and fought for so that people could live freely no matter who they are is being by very few people, loudmouths, a mob, a university president who won't act, a DA who won't act. This is a small number of people who are trying to, via, if I may say, my book, frighten people into surrender because they're the loudest voices in the room and maybe have the biggest weapons at this point. This is the time for action. We've been educated on it. We know the importance of it. And especially for the one group in history, in recent memory, for the Jews, the ones that have been murdered, en masse, this is clearly an act that we've got to take and say enough is enough. It is not difficult. We know what to do. And it's a matter of just a few people taking action. Donald Trump sets the tone. Americans want that tone to be set. Parents want that tone to be set as well.
I mean, Jackie DeAngelis, Trump is trying to break through this. And, you know, if he's given a chance, he will. But I've heard this so often from Professor Alan Dershowitz. This DEI is the exact opposite of a merit-based system. Yeah. Whether that's merit-based admissions, whether that's merit-oriented achievement in the colleges and universities or their degrees or the departments that they've spawned in recent years, I thought Americans believed in merit. Biden is saying we have to believe in identity politics and, you know, set quotas and standards that are antithetical to our culture.
I believed in merit once, too. I thought that's what this country was founded upon. But I think what the president is saying when he ascribes to these DEI theories is that's not the way we're going to do things. As a matter of fact, since he's been president, he's sort of flown in the face of what America is. You know, I'm pleased that Speaker Johnson got up there and made the comments that he did. But it also reminds me that our current president is a coward and is not able to get up and condemn what we're seeing across our country right now. And it really speaks to who he is and the progressives, essentially, that he's representing. He spoke today about the foreign aid bill that passed in the Senate. He mentioned a lot of money is going to Ukraine. He mentioned Israel will get some money and we stand behind them, which he has said in his tagline since this started, but not really stood up for it in the way that people wanted him to. And then he reminded everybody that there was also money that was going to go to Gaza, to the Palestinians for aid, to pander to that side, to make sure that they were represented. And by not standing up there and condemning the fact that Jewish students on campus feel scared to go to school, and their administrators are saying, stay home, do your classes on Zoom.
It's outrageous.
That's their approach to fix this. He should stand up and say, this is not right. President Trump would, and that's why in so many situations, including this one, this probably wouldn't be happening if he was president.
You know, Steve Forbes, Jackie makes an important point. Speaker Johnson made the same point, emphatically made this point. Jewish kids don't feel safe and are not safe on many of these college campuses. That is an outrage. That is an utter outrage in America.
Well, that could happen in the 2020s when we have the history of what happened in the 1930s. It's just beyond astonishing how something like that could happen and not receive the almost universal moral condemnation that would have happened 20, 30 years ago. We've lost our moral bearings here. And the Biden administration is so craven, just wanting to win a few votes in Michigan. Joe Biden says he's the Franklin Roosevelt. Franklin Roosevelt in the late 1930s risked, alienated big blocks of voters to find ways to help Britain when they were faced with the extinction by the Nazis. It was not popular, but he had the courage and the political skills to find ways to do it. Joe Biden is just craven.
Tammy Bruce, I'll come back. I know you're not an economic specialist, but the point that Steve Forbes made at the outset is a very important point. You want to hit these schools, hit them where it hurts, the endowment.
Yes.
Endowments are basically tax-free. They pay a very small total expenses for a college and university, very, very tiny tax rate. I think it's 1%. It could even be less than 1%. What Mr. Trump seems to be saying is if they are in violation of his standards, then he's going to go after them. He will tax them and he will fine them up to the amount of the total endowment. Now, what do you think about that?
It reminds them that, in fact, they're at risk. This is about money. We're looking at, with Harvard and other Ivy League universities, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars. It's a remarkable stash of cash. Mm. There's got to be a repercussion that people feel. And you don't need to be an economic master. All you need to do is watch Fox Business, perhaps. But if you have any kind of a household budget that you work on and that you have a savings and that you know what you can afford to do and not do, and that what you don't want to do is have an unforced error where you lose some of that money, we understand that. We also understand what it costs now to go to these schools. They've got all this money, hundreds of percentage points of increase, inflation of what these colleges now cost. For what? To teach your child how to get arrested? Mm. To teach them how to be a bigot? Mm. To teach them how to injure and frighten a Jew? Is that why you're paying $50,000 a year? And then you will, those degrees from USC, it's mine, Harvard, Princeton, what are they worth now? So we've got a lot at stake for everyone's economy, everyone's personal economy and professional dynamic. But that has got to be the way it is, because for whatever reason that's been untouchable, it now has to be touched. And for Jews to be the ones who are removed from an environment and told effectively to hide in the attic and do your work there is outrageous and has to be unacceptable. I like Speaker Johnson's remarks as well. Now we've got to see some action.
Yeah. Jackie, I've actually never talked much to Mr. Trump about this, but I think he would like DEI not only scraped from the federal bureaucracy and especially the Education Department, but I think what he's suggesting is you want to keep your accreditation with me. You want to avoid taxes and fines. Get rid of DEI on the campuses.
Yeah.
On the campuses.
And that's the
one
way
after another. Now, this has got to be crucial. Trustees are the ones who will do it. College presidents should stand up. I'm not hearing this. I'm not seeing anybody do this. What's happening?
That's the way you will actually affect change. But right now, we're just hoping that, you know, university presidents might resign because they think it's the right thing to do. Look, I think it's a combination of things when you talk about hitting them where it hurts. It's taxing these endowments. It's taking away the federal funds that they receive.
Yes.
It's the big donors like Robert Kraft and Bill Ackman saying, no, I'm not donating to this institution anymore. Once you pull that money away, the school literally is nothing. They will be forced to
I just want
right.
to inject, I'm seeing and reading that a lot of companies, including banks, are now getting rid of their DEI departments. They all loaded them up a little while ago. They're getting rid of them. Just not seeing it from the colleges and universities,
well,
particularly in the Ivy League. But it's not only there's state schools. I mean, there's violence today going on, I think, in the University of Texas in Austin, for example. I'm just not seeing it, reading it, or hearing about
because
it.
Because the companies have suffered financially as a result of it, and that's why they're pulling back. I'm not necessarily sure they've changed their ideology.
Right.
So if the schools suffer financially, they will take
so
a new approach.
So that goes to Steve Forbes'
exactly,
first point.
The first point.
Hit them where they hurt.
Hit them where they hurt and recognize, too, that DEI is a code word for speech suppression, conformity.
Mm.
Don't speak out. Universities are supposed to have real intellectual diversity. They've lost it. We've got to get it back.
And I think it's also become an excuse to avoid civil rights laws that have been on the books a long time, in our lifetime and before our lifetime. But in particularly, you know, the last 50, 60, 70, 80 years, there have been some very good civil rights laws on the books. Enforce them. Yeah. Enforce them for Jewish people. Enforce them for blacks. Enforce them for everybody. That's what's missing. That's what Biden doesn't say. Why doesn't he say that? He's been around for 1,000 years, for heaven's sake. He knows about these laws.
Yeah.
He ran the damn Judiciary Committee for a while. He knows about these laws, and he won't say that because of some tawdry political concerns in a couple of congressional districts. It just blows my mind. You want to say a last word, Tammy?
Well, can you imagine?
Give me 20 seconds. Cap me off in 20 seconds.
having to appease Jew haters to keep your job.
Wow. Wow.
Who are you and what kind of moral foundation exists when that's the issue?
Ouch. And you're right. Thank you. Appreciate it. You're all terrific. Steve Forbes is going to be back later in the show. We're having him do more duties for less money. Tammy Bruce, always a pleasure. Jackie DeAngelo's. You got to watch Jackie along with her co-host Taylor Riggs and Brian Brenberg on The Big Money Show. Weekdays at 1 p.m. Eastern right here on Fox Business. Thanks to everybody. All right. Now we're just going to switch gears on the fly. It's going to be great fun. Mr. Bill Barr, former attorney general, writes in The Wall Street Journal, the Security and Exchange Commission is watching you. He joins us now, former AG Bill Barr. I think he's still a good friend of mine. You wrote a tough piece in the journal about a week ago. I know I get a smile out of you for that. Of course, you're a friend. Orwellian surveillance state by the SEC without warrants investigating information. I score it, Bill, as 135 million some odd investors. That's how many. 135 million people in the investment markets. Names, addresses, birth dates, all kinds of information. You talk about 3,000 SEC personnel, 20 other regulatory agencies. Why does the SEC need to have this kind of information and invade our privacy?
They don't. We're crossing a real constitutional red line right now, and I've been appalled that there's not more pushback and people aren't more concerned about it. We have a basic set of rules in this country. As you know, banks, phone companies have a lot of records, personal records of ours, and vendors, credit card companies, and so forth. And the basic rules up till now have been that the government can't go and compel the production of that stuff about you, me, or anybody else unless there's some specific crime they're investigating, and this could be relevant to that crime. What the SEC is doing is saying, well, it'd be much easier for us if we collected all this information in advance, have everyone's investment accounts, the personal information about them, every asset they own, every trade in real time, so we can watch exactly what they're doing. Because if a crime commits in the future, we'll have all this stuff at our fingertips. Mm. And if we start going down that road, then the privacy of the American people will be utterly, utterly trashed. That is truly a Big Brother society.
Yes, it is. You talk about the Fourth Amendment requires you got to have a warrant for probable cause of a crime to get that kind of information from all these kinds of people. So the SEC is just walking through that. They don't care. This is all about, I don't know what this is about, control, information. I mean, I don't know what the motive is for it. I can't imagine.
Well, it's part of this avalanche of regulation, Larry, that is squeezing the life out of our economy. It's killing off medium and small-sized business so that it makes it easier for the regulators because they only have to deal with a few big companies that are usually, you know, willing to cut a deal with the regulators. And this stuff is coming down the pipeline, as you know, at an unprecedented rate, and they're trying to slip this kind of thing through. But this truly has to be stopped because if we allow them to take the position that they can go out and gather up all this information just so they have it if a crime is committed, there's no stopping point to that.
So we need some deregulation, don't we? We need to roll back all these Biden regulations. I just saw an article. Right. He's put $1 trillion worth of regulations on the books, $1 trillion worth of regulations in only 3+ years. You know, Bill Barr, old friend, on this show many times, although not quite recently, it's time for some deregulation. I know a candidate for president who wants to deregulate and cut taxes. And I'm there's a little birdie that told me that you are now in favor of Mr. Trump's reelection. Is that true?
Yeah, well, I've said, yeah, the choice now is a binary choice between these two candidates. And of the two, I support President Trump. And one of the reasons is because I think many of our critical problems, including the regulation, crime, restoring law and order, restoring control over our borders, rebuilding our defense in this increasingly dangerous world, standing by our allies. I trust President Trump to do that much more so than President Biden, I think. And I also worry very much that in the batting circle with Joe Biden is Vice President Kamala Harris. I feel that under these circumstances, the Republicans have to win in November.
Well, you have said it. You said in your book, by the way, that you basically agreed with most of Mr. Trump's policies, per se. You wrote a heck of a good book about it. At least I thought it was a good book. You were on this show several times talking about it. I assume that's still the case. Let me ask you something else, though, on this business, this trial going on in New York. As a former Attorney General twice, you're a distinguished AG twice. Bill, what this guy, Colangelo, who was number three in the Justice Department, resigned his post. He comes to New York. He's now working as an assistant DA or something, but he has become the lead prosecutor for this Alvin Bragg case, which so many distinguished people think is without any merit at all. What's that all about? I mean, we don't have a terribly a lot of time, but is that a connection? I mean, he was an appointee by Biden and by Merrick Garland, and all of a sudden he shows up in this New York courtroom. Does that show that there are clear links, dots connected between Joe Biden and this lawfare lawsuit against Trump here in New York? What do you think, Bill Barr?
I don't know if they're direct links because, you know, frankly, this has gotten in the way of the federal government's cases. So I don't know what the federal government's posture is toward this as the government and the administration. I think there are a number of people in the law enforcement community that were sympathetic to this case. I think this case is a stain on the criminal justice process. This is a case clearly of going after the man, not a crime. Mm-hmm. There is no crime here. There's no crime. Hush money is not a crime. Trying to protect your reputation is not a crime. About entering into a non-disclosure agreement is not a crime, even if you're running for office. Mm-hmm. There is no crime here, and they're trying to manufacture one, and they're trying to interfere with the election. That's what this is.
But you don't think, Bill, I don't have a lot of time left, but you don't think this Colangelo person from the number three job in the Justice Department, now being the lead prosecutor in this case, that doesn't connect dots between Mr. Biden and the Alvin Bragg case?
You know, that's one way to read it. I also think there may be, you know, there are federal prosecutors who detest President Trump and, you know, would like to use the legal system to handicap him. So I think that could be a factor here, too.
All right. We'll leave it there. Bill Barr, former attorney general, continuing friend. Thank you, Bill. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Larry.
You betcha. Take care. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. And the other side of the break, we're going to look into taxes and regulations and what Joe Biden wants to do and how
how Donald Trump would do it completely differently. We've got Steve Forbes and we've got Breitbart's John Carney. I'm still Kudlow, sticking around. Lots more to come.
The Bottom Line with Dagan and Duffy on Fox Business.
We view the world the same way.
I'm sure we'll have some disagreements, but you don't want to get her mad.
No, you don't.
The Bottom Line with Dagan and Duffy on Fox Business. Invested in you.
This is what I'm so excited about as I am engaged. You say couples should not merge their finances after they get married. Why?
Never, never, never. Because marriages do fail. But worse, think about a successful marriage, 30, 35 years. Perhaps the spouse dies. If you don't have your own financial identity, you're a ghost. You're an absolute ghost, which means you got to keep your own credit card during the entire marriage. You have to have your own account. You have to have your own investment account. You must be a person in the financial system. Every woman has to keep her financial identity.
Isn't that dangerous?
Never.
Isn't it? I mean, almost
sounds like
practice. Yeah, like part of it is trust. House. Like you see what your spouses are doing.
You can have a merged account with a merged credit card throughout your entire life. But the minute your spouse dies and you don't have any financial identity, you're wrong. Things could get very bad for you. And by the way, I love love. This is all about l'amore. And that's why I backed a company called Hello Prenup, two women lawyers that help women get prenups in that euphoric stage when you're not thinking about money when you should be. 50% of marriages end within 7 years, not because of infidelity, because of financial stress. One outspends the other. Mm. What's wrong with keeping your financial identity? It's nothing to do with disrespecting your spouse or your significant other.
But do you think maybe part of why we have so many divorces is sort of this emerging mentality where maybe it's not a partnership? Mm. It's not a
It's
team.
Not a partnership if you don't both have the same financial goals. I mean, it's you know what I tell people? Because I really care. If you're young and you're on your third date, on the second glass of wine, talk about money. Talk about money on your third date because obviously there's an interest. And you got to start sniffing around. You got to find out what the background is of that significant other. Because if you're together after three dates, it's the second glass of wine where the truth starts coming out. This is great advice. Everybody should listen to me on this and say, listen, can we talk about your family? Have you been bankrupt? Do you have any debt? What's your student loan size? That's what matters. This is real love.
It's a fun line, right, though. No. I did just read a Washington Post reporter who said he was at a party and he saw someone Google someone's net worth right as they met.
Bringing in the new oil well is essential to Cameron Energy's survival. But so, too, is ensuring that the 2,000 other wells on the property keep the oil flowing for the American public. And making sure that happens is up to well tenders like Brad Baughton.
So, got a busy day today. Going to try and get as many wells pumped as we can. And I'm pretty eager to get home because it is my son's birthday. So, we're going to get pumping.
Across the U.S., wells like these extract more than 4,000 gallons of oil per second, or about enough to fuel your average car for 10 years. But unlike larger operations, which can pump oil around the clock, the wells at Cameron Energy need to be routinely shut off to allow oil reservoirs to refill underground. Years of experience and a pretty strict schedule tell Brad when they're ready to be fired up again.
Open up the production valve where the oil's going to come up the tubing.
Pump jacks like this are the workhorses of the oil industry, and their mechanics are ingeniously simple. A gas or electric motor powers the above-ground assembly, which connects to a rod running 2,000 feet down to the oil reservoir. There, a pair of one-way valves work in tandem to pump oil up to the surface. And here in Pennsylvania, that oil is one of a kind.
So if you notice the yellowish tint in this oil, you won't see it anywhere else in the world. This Pennsylvania crude oil is yellow because it's a paraffin-based oil, lightest, sweetest oil in the world. So I've got a bunch more to get to right now, and we're going to get moving.
The The Evening Edit with Elizabeth McDonald.
One of the biggest goals of the show is to look out for Americans. We pull back the curtain and show you what's really going on.
Elizabeth McDonald is breaking the biggest stories. The Evening Edit on Fox Business. Invested in you.
So, question for the House. How long can the economy survive under Joe Biden's tax and regulatory octopus? Joining us now is John Carney, Breitbart economics editor and co-author of the Breitbart Business Digest. And back with us, Steve Forbes, very graciously helping us out today. Gentlemen, take a listen to what President Biden just had to say about taxes.
Trump is proud of his $2 trillion tax cut in his administration that overwhelmingly benefited the very wealthy and the biggest corporations while exploding the federal debt. Now Trump is saying if he gets elected, he wants to give another. By the way, that tax cut expires the next year. Okay? Well, let me tell you something. It's going to say expired and dead forever if I'm elected.
Well, that's just wonderful. Expire and dead forever, ever. Steve Forbes, because you're so gracious, why don't you lead us off? A good piece in today's Wall Street Journal, former Senator Phil Graham and Mike Solon. Real median household income. Just put this stat on the table. Real median household income increased by $5,220 in 2019 alone. That is 49% higher than the previous increase in 2015 and 11 times the average percentage gain over the prior 50 years. In other words, in 1 year, this tax bill that Biden wants to end and expire did better for middle-class people. This is median, average people, average families, working families. In 1 year, did better than the entire Obama-Biden presidency.
Well, what it underscores is the whole purpose of government is supposed to be to enable people to get ahead. As Lincoln put it, improve your lot in life. Under Trump, they did. So this was simply one of the tools he used, deregulation and some other ones. It worked. Biden, who portrays himself as the tribune of the people, is actually crushing the people. And what if he gets away with not only letting these tax cuts expire, but also putting in a 45% capital gains levy and some of the other junk he wants to do, he'll have a Great Depression. We'll be in 1932 again.
John, regulatory stuff. Let's just talk for a minute about that. Doug Holtz-Eakin has put out some new numbers on regulations. President Biden's final rule costs are expected to be $1.4 trillion. $1.4 trillion in Biden's. Obama was a paltry $303 billion, bad enough. Donald Trump, $30 billion, pretty good. What do you make of that?
I think exactly what you're saying about how well the American people did under Donald Trump is related to those numbers. When you add on these giant regulatory burdens onto the private sector, what you end up doing is crushing the ability of businesses to grow, crushing the ability of businesses to hire people, crushing the ability to people to start new businesses. That's what happened under Obama when it was just one-fifth of what Biden has done. And by the way, Biden is, this is just the track record so far. Imagine what he'll do in a lame, when he's a lame duck president if he gets reelected. It'll be four times what we have right now. Just this week, they put on so many regulations that the American Action Forum said they've never seen a week like this. Mm. They put on tailpipe emissions that cost something like $850 billion. They put in new lamp regulations, Larry,
because they think
our lights are too bright and they're using up too much energy. So, you know, you better adjust your eyes so that you can read in dim light, because they can't find a thing that they don't want to regulate and have punitive regulations on the U.S. economy.
You know, Steve Forbes, to this, all these points, Joe Biden never talks about economic growth, and he pretends to talk about middle-income families, but the reality is the numbers show clearly that Trump's corporate tax cuts help middle-income families better than anything Biden or his predecessor Obama ever did. Why don't they ever talk about growth anymore?
Because that's not their agenda. It's very revealing what they don't talk about, because it's about control. Every aspect of your life. Alexis de Tocqueville, the great French aristocrat who wrote a great book about the American democracy back in the 1830s, warned that one form of tyranny is nibble away at people's individual freedoms. Not a big thing like speech, but what you can and cannot do. Now you're not going to be able to have sliced cheese anymore in plastic wrappers and stuff like that. Little things like that just demoralize the people. It's all about control. It's modern socialism. You don't have to own the things. You just control everything.
This was your opinion. Socialism through the regulatory state. This is what you said over three years ago, and you were dead right.
A great example of that is under the new tailpipe emissions regulations, they think that we'll have to have 56% of cars be electric vehicles by 2030. Guess what? No, that's just a couple years away. And by the time, and nobody wants the electric cars that they're trying to sell now. They're going to try to force that on the American people by basically declaring our internal combustion engines illegal. And so that is exactly what Steve's saying. It is tyranny by regulation. That's what we're getting.
You think there's going to be a political revolt against that stuff, jamming it down our throats?
We're already seeing it. Look at what's happening to the earnings of the big car companies. GM made a lot of money because they're selling people the cars they want to drive.
Finally.
Right. They're
Finally.
Selling Silverados.
That's right.
They're selling GMC
right.
Sierra.
That's a great point.
People
yes.
don't
yes.
want to drive those electric
they
vehicles.
They were losing a fortune
exactly.
as they went EV. Now they've gone back and they're putting either hybrids or gas-powered cars and they're finally making money.
Right. Let us into our trucks and let us drive gas-powered engines. That's what the American people want. And I think we're going to start to see that at the ballot box. People are going to vote for freedom to drive the cars they
and
want.
And in New York City, they should hit on pizza freedom. Being able to get pizzas from wood-burning ovens, which they ban now.
I'm for that, too. That's fabulous. You two are awesome. John Carney, Steve Forbes. Thanks, both of you.
Thank
Steve,
you.
Thanks for double duty. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. And then Mark Simone and Joe Concha, they're going to critique and pan a left-wing group of lawyers who, as a chorus, are attacking Donald Trump on a daily basis on some other networks that are not as smart as this one. Anyway, I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
I try to bring a positive perspective. People may call that naive, but I've got a pretty good track record.
Cavuto Coast to Coast on Fox Business. Invested in you.
I think here in Arizona, the most important thing is to find the perfect sunlight, and ours just happened to be our front yard.
Nicole Hood is very proud of her front yard garden, one she says wouldn't be as lush and bountiful without farmyard.
So for about three seasons, I tried to plant on my own with no success, and then a friend told me about farmyard, and Rebecca and Troy came over and just kind of gave me some of the fundamentals on how to plant, how to water, and suddenly everyone in my neighborhood thought I had a green thumb, and I'm going to completely take credit for it.
We are a design, build, and maintain edible garden company. So we build custom raised beds for our clients. We make our own compost. We do irrigation systems.
Rebecca Kidwell, co-owner of Farmyard LLC, says she and her husband, who runs a company with her, give their clients as little or as much assistance as they want or need. Their main interest is to show people how to grow their own food.
So many people come from back east or in the Midwest where they're used to dropping a seed into the soil and it immediately taking, and so out here, so many people are frustrated with growing because they think that they can do the same in our desert soils. That's not the case.
You can grow fruits and vegetables 12 months out of the year in Arizona, according to Kidwell. She's preparing for spring and summer by planting melons and pumpkins and corn that she says thrive in triple-digit weather.
There's something to getting your hands in the soil, grounding, getting dirty, you know, that's kind of fun to do at the end of the day and getting to share. I mean, having a garden in the front yard, we have met so many neighbors. We've kind of become a little stop on people's walks.
I would tell anyone that the opportunity to grow your own food and allow your children to be part of the process is so wonderful. Talk about getting your kids to eat their vegetables.
Hood says her children are just as excited as she is to harvest the garden and sit down together as a family for a healthy meal they helped grow. Anita Roman, Fox 10 News.
I always talked about it as a child.
I have been thinking about this since I was 7 years old.
My dad will say I was 12 years old when I came in and said I wanted to be an astronaut.
I've wanted to be an astronaut basically as long as I can remember.
A dream for some, decades in the making. NASA's newest astronauts now have their spacesuits.
First time you put that on and you're getting in the water, it's impressive. You just feel this, you've made it almost in some way.
It gave me shivers.
I was like, I'll never forget that.
The class of scientists, doctors, engineers, and researchers were chosen 2 years ago from over 12,000 applicants. After making the cut, they moved here to Houston and have been training physically and mentally for their first space flight.
We learned about the space station systems. We learned to speak a little bit of Russian. We learned how to fly the T-38. We do spacesuit training in the neutral buoyancy lab. And then we learned how to operate the Canadian arm, the robotic arm that's on the space station right now.
Now it's time to report to their jobs in the astronaut office.
There's so much in front of us right now, like whether it's a Starliner flight or a Dragon flight or getting to work on a development program or work current operations with what's going on the space station right now. There's really not a bad job in the astronaut office.
And they're preparing to take that office to space.
The science that we're doing on the International Space Station, there's nowhere else in the universe that we can do that science. So we're learning things about medicines, about the human body, that space gives us a laboratory to work in that we don't have on the ground.
The Johnson Space Center director says it'll be at least a year before we see any of these astronauts head to outer space. And if you're interested in becoming an astronaut, the new applications for the next class are now open. At the Johnson Space Center, Joy Addison, Fox News.
All right, let's talk a little politics. We've got Mark Simone, WOR radio show host. We've got Joe Concha, Fox News contributor. Gentlemen, a montage of Democrats who were against anti-Semitism when Donald Trump was president. Take a listen to it. Golden oldies.
A presidential campaign where hate speech went unchallenged. An atmosphere that had emboldened anti-Semites.
So Donald Trump's comments were anti-Semitic, as you all know, and insulting.
The former president's comments were utterly disgusting and a textbook example of the kind of anti-Semitism facing Jews.
So among other things, it's deeply insulting and offensive, and I think a dangerous anti-Semitic trope. More than that, though, the president is severely misguided.
Okay, some golden oldies. Whatever happened to them? I don't hear them now. I just heard them attack Trump. Joe Biden hadn't done a thing, hadn't lifted a finger to stop this anti-Semitism or the DEI that spawned it. He hasn't enforced any of the civil rights laws, Mark Simone. Where's this crowd now?
The hypocrisy Democrats are famous for. You know, 2020, I hope it doesn't happen this summer, riots all summer long against bigotry. Now we've got riots for bigotry. I never thought I'd see this on a college campus. Mike Johnson was brilliant with that speech a few minutes ago. It's the speech Joe Biden should have given. Instead, 11:15 this morning, he talked for about 30 seconds and didn't say much of anything.
Joe, what do you make? Let's do the hypocrisy thing one more round. Then I want to get to the groupthink Democratic lawyers. But it is quite extraordinary. Against Trump, they were up in arms. Mm-hmm. Where are they now?
There's no principles here, right? It's all about political expediency and what's going to get a good soundbite onto CNN or MSNBC or ABC or NBC or CBS. But did they actually ever believe that Donald Trump, whose daughter married a Jewish guy,
there you go,
and whose grandkids are being raised Jewish, is somehow anti-Semitic all of a sudden? And forget even while he was president, like before that, you didn't hear a thing about Donald Trump being anything when it came to being racist or anti-Semitic or xenophobic. It's all for show, Larry.
And they never proved a thing, and it was just all a lot of scurrilous attacks, and it was just absolutely typical. Yeah. And here they go again. All right, let's talk about another fun thing. Democratic lawyers, groupthink, secret session. Now, there's some famous... They're gearing up for other networks, discussions about the Trump trials. Yeah. Lawrence Tribe, George Conway, Jeffrey Toobin, John Dean, a very famous Nixon lawyer... Norm Ornstein used to be a conservative Republican. Jennifer Rubin used to be Republican. Andrew Weissman, who's an old Trump hater going way back. Joe, what kind of grades do you give them for these other networks? They're rehearsing their stuff.
Every Friday, this happens on Zoom. And if you're inviting Jeffrey Toobin to a Zoom call, there should be a rule that says, show your hands at all times. right? Because he got the shaft from CNN for doing that. But I mean,
it's a family program.
It is. So when you hear all these legal analysts on these other networks, all kind of sound a lot like each other, as if a memo went out or as if it was, I don't know, rehearsed. This is exactly what's going on. It's a coordinated attack on Donald Trump, who said this is a legal conspiracy against me. And now we're seeing that it's being carried out by those who are on these networks on seemingly an hourly basis, Larry.
What do you think, Mark? I'm sure you know you're on a first name basis with all these people, right? Regulars on your radio show.
Yeah. Let's remember the only manufacturing jobs Joe Biden brought to America are these guys manufacturing charges against Trump. All these dirty prosecutors manufacturing charges. The good news is it takes 12 of them to figure out what to say on these shows. All these cases are from years ago, and we're supposed to believe all four just happened to hit as Trump starts his campaign. And these guys like Andrew Weissman, he's the Russia hoax.
That's right. That's right.
Him teaming up with these journalists, it's just awful.
John Dean. Nixon lawyer. What happened to him? John Dean, famous Nixon lawyer. Norman Ornstein and Jennifer Rubin used to be Republicans. Now they're, I don't know what they are now. They're not really, but they're all Trump. This is part of the, Trump derangement syndrome, basically is the way I see it.
Yeah, no, it's the most awful conspiracy. Hey, by the way, everybody that they work for, those networks, NBC News, CBS News, they've all signed non-disclosure agreements. They've all paid hush money.
Oh.
You know, they had to clean up that CBS News scandal, Les Moonves, the Matt Lauer scandal. Mm. These organizations have signed a lot more non-disclosures than Donald Trump ever has. Oh,
good point. Joe, Bloomberg poll out today. Biden's temporary comeback is dead. Trump now leading in 6 of 7 swing states, Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina. I mean, he's got some pretty big leads. The only one he loses in, he's ahead in Wisconsin as well. So Trump is ahead in 6 of 7 swing states. What do you mean? I mean, the trial so far doesn't look like they're really hurting.
Not at all. And this isn't we're cherry picking one poll and saying, see, this is what's been happening since October. Poll after poll, Trump leading in the only states that matter in elections, North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. And I'm missing one, but it'll come to me eventually.
Mark Simone and Joe Concha. Well done, gentlemen. We appreciate it. Under the clock. I'm Kudlow. Be right back with my last word.
Boeing's loss in the most recent quarter was narrower than forecast. The numbers reflect lower deliveries of its 737 MAX jets and the grounding of the 737 MAX 9. Boeing says it's undertaking comprehensive actions to strengthen quality and safety and answer concerns from the FAA. Oracle is moving its global HQ from Austin, Texas to Nashville. The company's chairman says the goal is to get close to a major healthcare hub. Oracle has been working on the Nashville campus for 3 years. According to local reports, it's cost the company so far $1.2 billion. A survey finds nearly half of all baby boomers couldn't afford their current homes if they were to buy them today. Over 19% of respondents say they probably could not afford it, and more than 18% definitely couldn't afford to buy their home today. And hotel prices are jumping for college graduation weekends. Reuters says some hotels that usually cost $100 a night are up to $1,000. Pricing algorithms crank up prices when demand soars. Many hotels are now taking reservations a year in advance. That's business. In New York, I'm CJ Papa.
The city of South Lake Tahoe is known for its crisp winter weather, beautiful scenery, and outdoor attractions. Now city leaders have an ambitious goal they say is aimed at protecting the environment that is so crucial to this city's character.
The most aggressive target for carbon-free renewable electricity in the United States.
Devin Millbrook is the mayor of South Lake Tahoe, where the city council just voted to achieve 100% renewable carbon-free electricity by 2030.
We've always been a global leader in the environment, and this is just one of those consistent steps forward.
The mayor says the city of South Lake Tahoe already gets about 40% of its electricity from renewable sources. But events this summer convinced city leaders that they needed to go to 100%.
The blunt of climate change was really on our community this year.
The Caldor Fire came close to destroying this mountain city, and a drought has placed added strain on the community.
We're really seeing those impacts that we typically think of as the next century and 100 years out. We're feeling those today, so we really need to act and to ensure that we have these wonderful winters moving forward.
The city will be using a mix of wind, solar, geothermal, and hydropower, combined with battery storage to achieve its 100% renewable goal.
Obviously, there is an upfront cost when you're investing in things like solar and renewable energy projects, but they also have a return on investment.
Still, the mayor says there won't be any new taxes associated with the turn toward renewables and says the true benefit will be the preservation of the Sierra for years to come.
Like, I want to be able to ensure that future generations can have the same experience, enjoying the lakes, swimming in the waters, hiking, skiing. All of that is really so important for our community and the future generations, and I think it's something that we as the current stewards and leaders of the community need to do.
The goal of getting to 100% carbon-free energy by 2030 might be lofty, but the mayor of South Lake Tahoe says bold action needs to be taken now to combat climate change, and he's inviting other cities across the U.S. to take similar steps. In South Lake Tahoe, Max Gordon, Fox Weather.
Hello to our viewers in Israel. Thanks for watching Fox on Partner. If you want the latest reports from our correspondents, visit foxnews.com and foxbusiness.com.
In business, you need to stay a step ahead.
Your top stories right now.
They've all gone up. Look at that.
So download the free Fox Business app. Just scan the code on your screen.
You got the NASDAQ moving ahead comfortably.
Put the markets at your fingertips. Get the latest from Wall Street to Washington with the inside investors need.
So here's the good news, folks.
Let's take a quick look at the markets.
The Fox Business app makes it easy to be in the know wherever you go.
Let's get right down to it.
Download the Fox Business app from your app store or scan the QR code on screen now.
You know, good for Speaker Mike Johnson, point number one. And point number two, purveyors and provocateurs of anti-Semitism are violating civil rights laws and should be busted accordingly.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.